Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This is Series 4, Episode 6, and this one is all about Bolivia.
Thank you everybody who is listening and tuned in to yet another episode of What the Faux Travel Podcast. Good to have you guys with us.
Now, this time we're going back to South America. A lot of you, if you listen to the show regularly, you'll know that we have been traveling here for about a year since Christmas Day 2018.
Yeah, yes, you're right, 2018. Yeah.
So we've been in South America for a really long time, and yeah, we're going to tell you all about Bolivia today.
Yeah, so before we get on with Bolivia, little update, let's tell you where we are now. We are still in Mexico, and we are in Puerto Vallarta,
which is on the Pacific side, so the left side of Mexico. We're here by the beach, you know, we've got a pool, we're resting. We've got like 4 to 5 weeks left of the trip, and I'm not sure we've actually said it on air yet.
Yeah, our return home date. Go on, Amy, take it away.
So we're going home from this trip on the 25th of November, and that means we're back in the UK on the 26th. Which is really sad, and the trip is coming to an end. We have 4 to 5 weeks left. We've got loads planned in between. You know, next week or in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be doing Day of the Dead Festival in Mexico, which of course there'll be a mini episode about. And then we're going into the United States of America. We'll be doing LA, Vegas, Grand Canyon, Chicago and New York.
Still loads left, like you said. But you know, because it's the end of this huge, massive trip, I mean, we are knackered, but we're also loving it. And sometimes I feel like, yeah, okay, I'm ready for it to end. And other times I'm like, no, I don't want it to end. But it's a bit scary. We're looking forward for many reasons to going home. But because we're at the end, it feels like, oh my God, we haven't got much left. But if you think about our lives before, the stuff we've still got planned between now and then, everything you just listed, is still way more than what we were able to do, you know, in a year. So we've still got a few weeks of travel left. Lots of exciting things to look forward to. But yeah, the trip is coming to an end. It's a strange feeling.
Right, so for this episode of Bolivia, we are going to be giving you game show facts. We're going to have language lessons with our couchsurfing host, Sergio. We'll be telling you about Uyuni, which is where you'll see the largest salt flats in the world. We tell you how you can do the salt flats tour super cheap. Don't spend £300. We can tell you how you can do it for £30 instead. We'll be talking about La Paz, Copacabana, not the one in Brazil, the one in Bolivia. We also tell you about some strange superstitions in Bolivia to do with Pachamama and bones and skeletons. We tell you what a cholita is and how you can see cholita wrestling. We'll tell you about the strangest prison in the world in La Paz and meet a guy called Crazy Dave. And finally, our game for this month, because La Paz is mistaken as the highest altitude capital city in the world, which it's not, we play a game called How High Are You? We're going to whip through some shout outs now so we can get straight to Bolivia and tell you what you can do when you go to Bolivia.
Here we go. Shout outs. Got to start with the most important people, our patrons. If it wasn't for you guys, we would be home in the UK by now.
Definitely, we would have.
Yeah, your support, you know, it's how we keep the show going. But two more people have joined the crew, Preston Podolsky and Catherine Bowie. Bowie or Bowie, like the singer. But you guys, thank you so much for joining. Your support really is appreciated.
Thanks, guys.
The rest of the shout outs. We heard from Benson Ekpo on Twitter. He said he is an aspiring travel and lifestyle podcaster and just found our show. He said it's an inspiration and he binged 4 episodes back to back. Thank you for getting in touch, Benson. We also heard from Ellie Belly on Instagram. She said our podcast is a gem and has helped her upcoming India trip. Fantastic. One of our favorite countries in the world. And finally, Jamie Spring on Instagram said him and his girlfriend have quit their jobs for a trip around Southeast Asia and South America. Go on, guys. That's exciting. You're at the start of your trip. We're at the end of ours, but very exciting. And thank you, everyone, for getting in touch. You know, we love hearing from you guys.
Yeah, thanks for getting in touch and good luck on your trips. They all sound incredible. And I'm jealous. I'm sitting in Mexico right now and I'm jealous because I'm about to go home and I'm going to cry. Anyway, let's get on with Bolivia. We need some game show facts.
Amy, hit it. Country of extremes, landlocked Bolivia is the highest and most isolated country in South America. The population is around 10 million and the capital city is Sucre, not La Paz. The major languages are Spanish, Quechua, Aymara, and Guarani. In 1824, Venezuelan freedom fighter Simon Bolivar, after whom Bolivia is named, liberates the country from Spanish rule. 1 year later, Bolivia becomes independent with Simon Bolivar as its president. Bolivia has the largest proportion of indigenous people in South America, who make up around 2/3 of the population. Bolivia is one of the world's largest producers of coca, the raw material for cocaine. First elected in December 2005, President Evo Morales is the first president to come from the country's indigenous community. As a leader of Coca Growers Union, his policies emphasize on traditional indigenous Andean values. Bolivia is home to the world's largest salt flat on the outskirts of the town of Uyuni. This prehistoric lake dried up and left behind over 10,000 square kilometers of salt, over 100 meters deep. Bolivia is home to the world's most dangerous road. Tourists can see this road on mountain bikes. Lake Titicaca, which straddles the border between Peru and Bolivia, is the world's highest navigable lake. It sits 3,812 meters above sea level. That's 12,500 feet, and is also South America's largest lake by volume. And finally, zebras, or rather people dressed as zebras, wander the streets of La Paz, helping children cross the road safely and educating drivers and pedestrians about road safety.
Zebras?
Yeah, now when I read this fact, I was thinking, what? We went to La Paz, we didn't see this. But when I saw the picture that came with the fact, it all came back to me straight away. I remember people dressed up as zebras. I thought they were just like, I don't know, advertising a restaurant or, I don't know, the local zoo or something. But that is true. You can find zebras or people wandering around La Paz.
I don't remember that at all.
I promise you, it happened. And I remember.
One fact that you just said, though, that I want to highlight is Bolivia has the largest proportion of indigenous people in South America. And I think you can definitely tell when you're there. Like, if someone said to me, picture Bolivia, what I've got in my head, I don't know about you, but I just see the markets and all the Cholita women, which will explain who they are a little bit later. But they're always walking through the streets, carrying all of their stock, got things on their heads. You know, they're carrying a child while carrying all these six bags of materials that they're selling. I think when you're in Bolivia, you really feel like you've gone back in time in a good way. And you just really understand the culture just by looking at it, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's what I loved about it. And do you not think Bolivia in South America, before Bolivia, we'd done Chile, we'd done Argentina and Brazil, and all loved, you know, we love Brazil. We go on about it all the time. But did you think that when we got to Bolivia, that was the first time we really felt like, oh, like we're in South America, like all like European likenesses and like all European ties had kind of gone, because the other countries before, they're still quite European, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're just very mountainous people. And by that is you can tell they've lived in the mountains for years and years. Yeah, you go to Argentina and everybody looks European because all of the Italians shipped over. So that's why you have a lot of Italians in New York as well, because there were two boats that they could get on. They went to New York or they went to Argentina in South America. So yeah, everyone there looks very European. But yeah, once you walk up to... Walk? You don't want to walk that far. Once you travel up to Bolivia and Peru, you can really see the mountains and the indigenous people and how they all work together. It's really fascinating. And actually, if you've been to Argentina before, particularly in Salta, there's a museum there about mummies, the best preserved mummies in the world. And there you can see the likeness between North Argentina and Bolivia, because obviously they're very close, they border each other. But no, it's a really, really fascinating country, one that we love and that we're excited to tell you about. So they were game show facts. Let's move on to language lessons. And this time we're having language lessons with Sergio. We wanted to know if their greetings were the same as Latin American Spanish, you know, hola, ciao, cómo estás, etc.
Yeah, in general, yeah. In South America, we say hola, o qué tal, ciao. Adios, for example, is more in Spain, but in most of South America is ciao.
And so what are some different words that Bolivianos use rather than other South American countries?
Yeah, for example, after you drank like the day before, the next day you're feeling the sensation when you're feeling after you drunk.
Hungover.
It's chaki here. It's called chaki. Somebody has chaki. They drank a lot.
Okay, is there any relation to Jackie Chan?
No. There's one really, really Bolivian that nobody else understands in South America. It's called macurca. When you do a lot of exercise, and then the next day you're feeling pain, and you have macurca. But that's really, really something Bolivian. Then also the chaya, maybe you heard about that.
You told us about that last night.
Before drinking alcohol, you give some alcohol to Pachamama, which is the Mother Earth.
Yeah.
And you give it to the, like, you put it on the floor. Like, chaya. And also when you're buying something, like a car or like a house, you decorate everything, you give alcohol to the Pachamama, and that's also called chaya.
So, yeah, it's kind of giving offerings to Mother Earth, yeah. But it's also used as a verb. It's not just a name, it's a verb.
It's, the verb is chayar, yo chayo, for example.
Do you have any bad words to share with us? any Bolivian swear words?
I think Bolivian, no. It's like, I don't know if you've already heard some.
Probably in South America, we might have heard some Spanish swear words, but there's nothing which is specifically Bolivian, no?
Yeah, and if specific Bolivian, no. We use a lot of, like, for example, carajo. It's like really strong.
Okay.
Like an expression.
Hmm? Does it mean like penis?
No.
Oh,
no, it's
okay.
Not something specific. It's just an expression. Then maybe you heard mierda.
Yeah, shit.
Yeah.
So what's the worst thing you could say to your enemy? What's the worst thing?
Like hijo de puta. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Hijo de puta. Yeah. I like that one. It sounds very Spanish. Hijo de puta.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a foreign swear word, eh?
It's the most fun part of learning a language, isn't it? Duolingo hasn't caught on to that just yet, I've noticed.
But it's really weird. I don't know about you, but when I was in school, I think it's the word you always remember, right? In the different language. You can't remember all the other grammatical kind of bits that you need to learn for your exam, but you can remember the swear words.
But I can remember yo bebo, tu bebe, el bebes. Is that right? I drink... You drink, he drinks.
Yeah, well done.
Smashed it. I'm learning Spanish.
You know, you've only been in Spanish-speaking countries for a year, but well done.
But it should be way better than it is by now. But Sergio, we're going to talk more about this guy later. The nicest guy I think I've ever met in the world.
Oh, he's lovely. So he's our couch surfing host from La Paz. That's who you just heard from there.
And he also talked about Pachamama, Mother Earth. We're definitely going to talk about that lady later as well. She plays a very important role in Bolivian culture.
Yeah, there's some weird traditions that we'll go into, but let's kick off. I always say that. Let's kick off. We're kind of into it already. But let's go over a kind of a brief overview of our trip. This one was quite a small one. We only did 3 places in Bolivia, but we spent about 2 to 3 weeks there in total, didn't we?
Yep. So we started with the big one, Iyuni, the salt flat. Then we went to La Paz. I was about to say the capital, which I've already mentioned isn't. But then we went to La Paz. Then after La Paz, Copacabana, but not the one in Rio.
No, there's another one, and it's in Bolivia, and that's around a lake called Lake Titicaca, which is really famous, so you may have heard of it before. But before going there, I always thought it was a really funny name, because Titi sounds like tits and caca means poo in Spanish, so it's Lake Tits Poo. There you go. I mean don't ever say that you don't learn from What the Faux Travel Podcast. We teach you the language and the culture.
But if people are listening now thinking how immature, we've all thought that when we heard of Lake Titicaca for the first time.
And apparently,
actually, quick fact for you, it was supposed to be the birthplace of the Incas.
Oh yes, that's why they've kind of had that civilization built around it, right?
Apparently, yeah. Or one of their gods was born there. Anyway, it's a very important, beautiful place. But shall we start, Amy, with a uni, but first of all, we had to get to a uni, didn't we?
Yeah. Now, if you've heard of this place or looked into it and wanted to go or have already been, you will know that this is quite notoriously quite expensive to do tours around here. So you'll either be going from a uni into San Pedro de Atacama, which is in Chile. If you want to know more about that, you can listen to our Chile episode. Or you come the other way, which is what we did, from Chile to Bolivia, right? So many people book tours, like a 3 to 4 day tour, which takes you from San Pedro. You get to see a uni. They'll take you to like a couple of museums. You'll go to a train graveyard, which sounds way more boring than it actually is. It's really cool, really fun place.
Good for the gram. And you go to some lagoons, see flamingos as well.
So, you know, you do a lot on this tour, but we arrived in San Pedro, which is an expensive place for South America anyway. So we knew that we're kind of going to be burning a lot of our travel money there. So we were looking at ways to do this cheaper. Now, the 3 to 4 day tours normally cost around 300 Great British pounds. So that's like, what, 350, 400 US dollars?
Something like that, yeah.
Around that. We did it for 30 pounds, and that's including our bus. Guys,
yes,
you need to listen to us because we're going to tell you how to do it cheaply.
Yeah, there's just a cheaper way. We found out all the things that we thought, oh, that's normal in South America, we have to do that. There's always a cheaper way. We looked online and we thought the tour was the only option because a few blogs, a few websites said there was no direct bus from San Pedro to a uni. But there is. So, £10, bang, we're in a uni straight away. Once we arrived, just opposite our hotel, we went to a tour company and they gave us a full day tour of the salt flat. No discount. This is their normal price for 20 quid each. So add your 10, your 20 together, 30 quid. We got to be uni, saw the salt flat and the train graveyard. And I'll give a shout out to the company. They don't know we're doing this. We didn't get a discount, but we thought they were so good. We want to mention it to you guys. And they were cheap. Tierra, that's earth, isn't it? Tierra?
Yeah.
Tierra Mística.
So the way that you spell that is T-I-E-R-R-A, new word, Mística, M-I-S-T-I-C-A.
And we saw everything on the salt flat. We went to there's like a little salt restaurant / hotel in the middle where we had lunch, which was included in the price. We went to the Cactus Island, which is very impressive. And we finished off seeing the sunset. And our driver whacked out a free bottle of wine for us all.
Oh, lovely.
But let's talk about the salt flat itself, because this is one of them things where I'm thinking it's going to be a bit like Machu Picchu, in our opinion, a bit overrated. We know, does it live up to the hype? I thought the salt flats were effing brilliant.
I agree. And actually, I was a bit worried because before this trip, a year previous, so about 2 years ago, we went to some salt flats on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, in Argentina, and they're called Salinas Grandes. And I was a little bit worried that that had kind of ruined it. As much as that was a brilliant day, I was a bit worried it ruined it for the big boy. You know, these are the largest salt flats in the world. And I still wanted them to blow me away. And they did.
Spectacular. The thing with the one in Argentina was, it was still cool and you could take the depth perception pictures. But when you look in the distance, you can see like where the salt ends, the one in Argentina. In Bolivia, it's just surrounding you forever. And it looks spectacular. Come up with some good ideas before you arrive for some pictures. It's well worth it. The tour guide normally helps you. A lot of fun taking pictures there. And if you go in the rainy season, one, it means you have to put up with the rain. But two, you get the largest mirror in the world.
And it looks absolutely stunning. I've seen so many pictures where you've got the salt flats and then you've got like an espejo, a mirror with the rainwater on top of the salt flats. And you can get your car and your group together and then you're reflected in the water. So there's two lots of you. It is great. You know, it's simple things, but it works. It looks so good. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, like thinking, what are these salt flats? I don't know what you're talking about. You might have seen pictures on Instagram because it is really popular, but everywhere you look is white. It's almost like snow, I guess, but obviously it's salt.
How fun was it in our 4x4 driving across the salt? Really, he was going fast, this guy, but you can see our end goal in the distance. This guy was driving fast, and like half an hour later, our end goal was still in the distance. Do you remember? It was really deceiving, and it just made you realize how big it was. Like, if you were a person stranded in the middle, you probably would make it back in a few hours of walking or running. But
maybe a few days.
It's massive, isn't it? It's so impressive. I thought it was bloody brilliant.
Listen.
Itself the town, so yeah, before I went I didn't know if the Salt Flats were a uni or what is a uni and what's not. So yeah, uni is the town right nearby the Salt Flats. What did you think of that place?
I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Really a really kind of peculiar town, but full of character, very rustic, not a really overdeveloped tourist place that I thought it would be, with massive high-rise hotels like the town Aguascaliente near Machu Picchu. We always bash Machu Picchu, but that was like it was amazing, but it was super developed, wasn't it? Aguascaliente. Uni still had that charm of just a really rural, authentic Bolivian town.
Yeah, and although there were a lot of tourists there, the majority of people were locals. I just, everywhere you looked was locals, and the cute local children as well.
Yeah,
Bolivian children just break my heart. They are just super cute. I remember us saying that it reminded us a lot of Cappadocia in Turkey, the town of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Goreme.
Yeah.
I liked it. Really peculiar, but cool looking place. And this is the first place we got to in South America where it really was cheap. And I'm talking about food here. This is where we were first introduced to meals where it's like a set menu. You can pay like £2 or £3 and you get soup for starter. You get a main dish, a bit of meat or vegetarian if you want to, with rice and a drink as well. So you get a 2-course lunch plus a drink for like £2.
And sometimes it comes with postres, dessert as well.
Ooh, yeah, you're right. But all the countries further north do this. So Bolivia, Peru, Colombia, Ecuador. But in a uni, this is the first time we were exposed to that. And I was thinking, you know, this is great. This is cheaper than going to a supermarket, buying food and cooking it ourselves.
And it was delicious food as well. But yeah, they call that almuerzo, which means lunch. But yeah, it's, if you say you're going for almuerzo, yeah, you're saying you're going for lunch. But it's specifically the set menu where you pay a set price. And like for me, sometimes I didn't want to eat soup every single day. So some restaurants, if you say, I don't want the soup, they'd knock off a little bit of money. So it'd be even cheaper. But some of them were like, no, that's the price. You either get the soup or you don't, which is fair enough. It's cheap enough as it is.
And one thing I want to say about a uni, be prepared, unlike I was, because I keep losing clothes, especially in the evening. Like once the sun goes down, a uni is cold, man, because of the altitude.
It is absolutely freezing.
So is there anything else you want to say about the Salt Flats or a uni?
Yeah, well, just going off the back of what you just said about being prepared with coats and scarves. If you're not, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, because it's so cheap there. I bought a pair of gloves. We both bought a new coat. It's a really cheap place to shop. So don't stress too much if you get there and think, oh my God, I need more clothes. Because yeah, it's cheap. There's a lot of markets there where you have your food market and your
Europa. Clothes market.
And your Europa market, if you want to go for that. There's lots of restaurants, lots of accommodation there. You won't find any problem in traveling. You know, it's a proper backpacker place, but also has the rural local side to it. So it's a beautiful place.
A uni in the Salt Flats. Our thumbs are up. We liked it a lot. We'd recommend it. Now, to move on, the only way that we could see, really, I think apart from an expensive flight maybe, but the only way we could see to get to La Paz was an overnight bus. For whatever reason, all the bus companies leave at the night time, like 9 or 10 o'clock. But then, you know, the next morning you wake up and you're in La Paz. And again, a very cheap journey. I can't remember exactly, 8 or 9 hour journey, £10. In this country, it roughly works out like $1 per hour you're on the bus, isn't it? I think that goes for Ecuador as well. But the journey was fine. I remember it being fine. I don't know about you. And then we're in La Paz, which is not the capital city.
I don't remember the journey, actually, so that suggests that it was okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember all the bad overnight journeys. But yeah, it's absolutely fine. Like you said, it's one bus. You kind of have to do it. So just crack on and get on with it.
Suck it up. Hopefully you get some sleep. So then when we arrived in La Paz, we were couch surfing. You've heard him before. You're going to hear him again. We were couch surfing with Sergio.
Oh, Sergio, we love you.
And you know, like, well, people who couch surf will know, when you send messages before and you're talking, I just got a good feel about this guy. I knew we were going to be fine. He was going to look after us. We were going to be safe. We arrived at his apartment like really early, I think like six, maybe five or six in the morning.
Like half six in the morning.
He woke up early for us and like made sure he had like breakfast ready and stuff before he went to work. He just made us feel right at home. And it also helped that he had a very lovely apartment.
Oh my goodness, guys. You know, we love couch surfing. We're always banging on about it. But it just, it's so brilliant when you find someone who you get on with. It's couch surfing, so you're getting that culture exchange, but they also have a beautiful, comfortable apartment.
It helps.
That, like, yeah, everybody wants to stay somewhere nice, but when you're traveling for such a long time, it really means a lot just to have a comfortable space. And I remember the bed in his spare room was really comfortable. We got some great sleeps there. So thank you, Sergio.
Sergio. So let's hear from him, shall we?
Yeah, let's hear from Sergio. So we wanted to know what he thought of Bolivia. You know, can you have a good life here?
Sure. Like, for me, it's really culturally rich country. It's a country, a place like no other country in the world. So I really like living here. Obviously have some social economical problems, but we can handle that. Yeah.
So you told us that Bolivia was the first country in Latin America to have a native person as president. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that sounds fantastic. But you were also telling us it hasn't all been good.
Yeah. At the beginning, it was like in 2009 that Evo Morales became president. He was the first indigenous president in I think, in the whole Latin America. Yeah. He was at the beginning like really popular, like won the election for 60% of the people. Like, it has never happened before in Bolivian history. And he was fighting for the indigenous rights, for the poor people at the beginning. And then they couldn't handle the power. So corruption started, and he is a defender of the coca leaf. So that kind of tradition that he had, and like the something culture of the Aymara culture, became something negative because of the use of the coca for cocaine production and stuff. Right now we're in a really complicated situation. We are in a socialist government, and a lot of things changed from like 10 years ago. We're still living in a political situation that we are like calm, everything is fine, but we never know like next year it's gonna change with the government, with the president like wanting to become like president for more time, for like fourth period. We're gonna have elections this year, so we don't know if he's gonna win or if he's not gonna win. And also the fact that we have this government is close to governments like Venezuela or Cuba, it gives us a reason like to be some sort of afraid like what's gonna happen next, like in those countries right now, right?
So there you were talking about the Aymara culture, and you told us that Bolivia's kind of cut into three in terms of the indigenous people. So yeah, you've got Aymara, and what are the other two?
Yeah, Aymara is more of the culture in the west, like La Paz, Oruro. And we also have in the middle of the country, we have the Quechua culture, that it's Cochabamba, Chuquisaca, and Potosí. Also that culture is part of the north of Chile and the south of Peru. And we have the Guarani in the east of the country, which is close to Paraguay and Brazil. Those three main cultures that are really, really different, but luckily we will still have like that culture mix in the cities, in the small towns, and at least until now it's well preserved.
So in terms of the government, so you have a president that comes from an indigenous background. How does that affect government? So is he bringing in more native people into the government?
Yeah, sure. At the beginning, like, there was more native people in the government, like, working. But it started to become a problem because of skills that you need to be, like, when you're working for the government. Like, the only reason that you should be an indigenous just to be working on the government. You just need to be prepared. There are some indigenous that are really, really well prepared, but the rest of the indigenous are not. Not yet. I'm not saying that they won't be in the future. But that was a problem because since they were not well prepared, there was more corruption in government, more, even more than years ago were in governments that they were against. And also the fact that I was telling you the cultural thing about defense of the cultural things like the coke and stuff, it really affects like the society right nowadays. Yeah. Mm.
And you were saying about the politicians, they have to speak an indigenous language?
They have to talk at least one native language. We have right now in Bolivia like 32 different native languages. That's why the countries, it changed name with this government. It's called nowadays the Plurinational State of Bolivia, because we have a lot of nations, like cultural nations in the country. Yeah.
Could you just tell us other places in Bolivia that you like, which are not popular with tourists, and maybe more tourists should go?
Yeah, sure. For example, there's a city right in the middle of Bolivia that's called Cochabamba. This is really nice. The weather is nice and people is nice. And also you have the best food in Bolivia. You have like a lot of different dishes. Cochabamba is like there's a phrase from people from Cochabamba, they don't eat to live, they live to eat. Yeah. So it's nice if you want to like try the really traditional Bolivian food, like to go there. There are other places, like for example, there's a place close to between Potosí and Cochabamba, which is in the right in the middle of the country, that's called Toro Toro. It's like a really nice natural place. It's not really, really, really famous for tourists. Like it's a really nice place like to go for a 3-day trip. It has a big canyon, it has caverns, and it has like nice trekking natural places. So there are really, really a lot of places in Bolivia like to go, but you just need time.
Sergio, thank you so much, my man. That was some really good information that you shared with us.
And I just want to say that one of the good things about Bolivia is that how forward-thinking they are with their indigenous people. You know, I'm not here to slate other countries, but there are other countries like the United States of America, like Australia, where they don't really, they don't have that much passion behind their history and indigenous people. Because if you look at them nowadays, like in Australia, for example, they're kind of shunned outside of the community.
Big time.
I really love about Bolivia that, yeah, their president is indigenous. That's incredible. And they're bringing more indigenous people into the government. Yes, there are problems. It's not going to be perfect. And like Sergio just said, it's causing more corruption within government. But yeah, as long as we can kind of ensure that they're educated and right person for the job. I just love that they are really being inclusive of their indigenous people. I think it would be more difficult for them not to be, to be honest, because everybody is. Yeah, they're kind of outnumbered. But yeah. I just really wanted to highlight that I think that's the beautiful thing about Bolivia, that they are very inclusive and they pride themselves on their people and their history. Obviously, there's conflict. There is in every country. Not every country is perfect. So yeah, I really like that about Bolivia.
I agree. I completely agree with you there. We had the best time staying with Sergio. We even stayed for a bit longer. He let us stay, bless him. He took me and along with his dad to a football game and he had a spare ticket. So he was like, no cost, come with me to watch football. We watched his team, Bolivar, named after Simon Bolivar. That's who the country Bolivia is named after. And we watched a football game, apparently at the highest altitude national football stadium in the world, which is interesting. We just had a great time with him, but that goes for our whole time in La Paz, really, didn't we? We did have a really good time in this city. I thought it was quite fascinating. And their metro, you fly through the air. It's like a teleférico, is that what
it's
called?
Yeah, it's called a teleférico.
It's like a gondola. If you've been skiing before and you go in a gondola, like a cable car, really. And that is their metro. And you get the most spectacular views of this mountain city.
It really is a fascinating city. And since traveling on this big round the world trip, I've really realized that for me, my perfect style of traveling is being in the mountains, being, you know, in the natural areas with pools and all of that. That's what I love. I do like cities, but I can't stay in them for too long. But I loved La Paz. I think it's so unique where, well, unique, it is unique, but not so in terms of South America, because, you know, you've got places like Medellin, which are similar, but it's surrounded by mountains. You're in this city, you're kind of in the bottom part of the mountains. You have lots of mountains around you. And the fascinating thing about La Paz is that yeah, the teleférico taking you along, but you can go to a place called El Alto. Now, that's the neighboring city. It kind of feels like one to me,
yeah.
But they are separate cities. And El Alto means like higher up or, yeah, higher. So you go up the gondola and then you get to El Alto. And so you can look down on La Paz. And it's a spectacular view. Now, I just need to tell you a precaution that El Alto is a more of a dangerous area. A lot of the locals will warn you from going there. It's just, you know, it's one of those places in South America that you shouldn't just go out there, show everyone all the tech that you've got, you know, your phone, your camera, everything. Just be aware of where you're going. We went up there by ourselves, didn't have a problem. And we actually met one of our listeners there, didn't we?
That's true, we did. You're quite right. Yeah, it's a Danish guy. He lives in the city. And he was like, oh, you're in my city, La Paz. Let me show you around, which is really nice. But you reminded me saying, yeah, like you're in the mountains, obviously, and La Paz is very high up. The altitude's over 4,000 meters. So even a small task of just tying your shoelaces, you do get out of breath.
Oh, yeah, like... You? I regularly found it when I was brushing my hair. Because I'm putting my arms above my head, I just get so out of breath. I don't think it means that you're unfit. No, I mean, I am unfit, but...
It's just the altitude. People get altitude sickness. It just happens. Even the fittest people get altitude sickness. But I've spoken to people who really didn't like La Paz, but I've also spoken to people who were supposed to go for 3 days and stayed for 3 months. It's one of them. I can understand why some people wouldn't like it because, of course, like all cities, there
are...
I
can't. Well, I don't get it. I think it was a fantastic place. I just don't get why. What do you not like about it?
I think if you're staying or hanging around in the wrong areas, like all cities, there are rough areas. And, of course, crime happens there, just as it does in every city. If you only see that bad side of it, of course, you won't like it. If you remember our friends, Kolya and Arta, who we interviewed earlier in this series, who are driving their combi around South America... A nightmare place to drive. I understand that. Mountainous roads, a lot of traffic. But yeah, we thought it was fantastic. And I just, every time we're in the city, yeah, like you said, you can see mountains everywhere. We're really high up. We're in the mountains. And I was just thinking, who the hell thought it was a good idea to build a city here? Like, it looks spectacular, but why? Why is there this huge city in the mountains? But no, I thought it was stunning. I really enjoyed it.
It was a bit bizarre. But also another point of interest that you might want to go when you're in La Paz, somewhere to go to, is the cemetery. And it's always weird saying that to people, oh, go to the cemetery. But it is one of the most beautiful cemeteries I've ever been to. I really loved it. So we have been to one in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. And that's really famous because Eva Perón, she's... I was going to say born there. She is buried there.
In a cemetery.
Definitely wasn't born there. So yeah, that's quite fascinating in itself. But the one in Bolivia just had the most beautiful artwork everywhere.
Amazing.
It's like graffiti street art. They're just these full walls of stacked caskets. You know when they're in the box and you can kind of pull them out? Everybody has their own little space and they put offerings to the dead in there. There's a lot of Coca-Cola bottles because that has a lot of significance in their history, and it's a sign of wealth, you know, and amongst other things. It's quite a long story to tell, but if you're there and you see lots of Coke bottles, it's to do with their culture and showing wealth and giving offerings to the dead. But these caskets, they go like 10 high, I think. And then, yeah, the side walls are just these beautiful indigenous artworks of showing, you know, local people and just showing off local art. And it's just really fantastic.
Yeah, and it's one of these countries where death's more like celebrated, like celebrate the life rather than mourn the death. Of course, people are sad when their loved ones die, but death's more celebrated. It's more accepted and more talked about in these countries, unlike like where we're from. Something to do with death. Strange superstitions in Bolivia. Offerings to Pachamama. Now, Pachamama, as you said earlier, and Sergio said earlier, is Mother Earth. So, for example, say, like, you've just bought a new home and you want to, like, you know, as we cheers, like, let's celebrate, let's have a drink to cheers, you know, or christen the house or whatever. They'd pour a bit of the drink onto the floor first. That's for Mother Earth, for Pachamama, and then they have some themselves. So, for smaller houses, it's tradition to sacrifice some sort of animal. Could be like some sort of livestock, a chicken, okay? We were told when we were doing our walking tour that apparently it's been known that for bigger buildings, they need a more significant sacrifice, don't they? Because the people or the company building the building, they want good luck from Mother Earth. So what we were told is that under some Under a lot of the big buildings in La Paz, you will find the remains of people, skeletons, okay? And the story we were told is that construction companies, I don't know who's in charge of this job, they would find a homeless person, offer them alcohol, you know, but this is a person who doesn't have ties or family or anyone, so no one's going to miss them, no one will report them missing, give them alcohol, they don't know what's going on, and then sacrifice them and build the building on top of them. That's what we were told, and that goes to show how strong some of these superstitions are and maybe still are today in a country like Bolivia.
It was really shocking when we found out. Our host Sergio did actually kind of briefly mention it to us. So when the tour guide started to tell the story, we knew what she was going to say. And she actually stopped and said, "Does anyone know what we would sacrifice?" And Nick and I looked at each other and we said in front of the whole tour, like 20 people, we said, "You sacrifice people." And the tour guide laughed and she was like, "No, how could you say that?" She was like, "You're so sick in the head." And then she was like, "Yeah, no, you're right." And so we were a bit embarrassed because I was thought, like, we do sound sick, but that is what they do. And it's really shocking. But yeah, like Nick said, this is how strong traditions can be. And even though, you know, in Europe or wherever you're from, it might seem crazy, but to them, this is natural. This is how they've been brought up. It's not that shocking. So yeah, if you're walking around La Paz or any sort of city in Bolivia, you could be walking over skeletons and bones.
I thought you were going to say, don't be alone at night and drunk. I thought you were saying they could be the victim.
Oh.
But yeah, it's mad. But it's all part of this interesting country. Something else which was interesting, strange, shocking, is something that a lot of you guys recommended we should do while we're in La Paz.
My friends, was cholita wrestling. Now earlier I told you I would explain what a cholita is, and that is the local women, cholitas. And when we were on this walking tour, we were told all about these cholitas and how their definition of beauty and how it's different to us. So they like bigger women in their community, and you know, in our communities we would like someone with a pretty face, a curvy slim body, I guess. I mean, I'm not pushing standards of beauty on you, but you know, long hair maybe. But in the cholita world, the most beautiful and sexy thing a woman can have is big, strong, muscly calf muscles. This is what the men are into, okay? So they want a woman who is strong enough to carry a child in one hand, all their stock for their shop in the other, you know, loads of big bags. They'll have stuff on their head and they're walking down the road. They've got their really long black hair. It's normally plaited, and I think it's kind of bad luck to cut your hair. You need to keep it as long as you possibly can. So it's just never cut. So you can imagine how long it is. It's all the way down to their bums. They're big, healthy women with strong muscles, ready to work hard. And they want their women, you know, selling, they want them looking after the kids, doing everything.
And these are the women that you see wearing the traditional clothing, the top little bowler hats. Funny story there. This is a true story. There's a company in Manchester in England made these bowler hats and sent them over to British people that were working in the rail industry in South America. Then when the hats arrived, they were too small for the men. So they thought, right, what can we do here? How can we make some money from these hats? And they told the women, oh, back in Europe, all the women are wearing these. And it caught on. And they're all wearing them, like Charlie Chaplin hats. These are the women. You've probably got a picture in your mind now. These are the cholitas. You see them a lot of the marketplace, like Amy was saying. But then we heard you can watch them wrestling. And we're like, I'm sorry, what? So we went to watch, and we weren't sure, were we? What did you think?
Well, we weren't sure if we were going to go anyway. It's a really famous thing to do in La Paz or Bolivia. We did a lot of research into it because by this point, you know, we'd been traveling for a long time. We'd seen a lot of weird and wacky things. And we were wondering, you know, tight on money, should we waste our money on this? Is it something we're actually going to enjoy? Because, you know, growing up, I've got two brothers. They always watch WWF. I knew kind of what I was getting myself into. I knew I wouldn't really like it. And we actually decided not to go. We then got quite a few messages from you guys on Instagram and Facebook saying like, oh my God, you're in La Paz. Are you going Cholita wrestling? So we're like, actually, do you know what? So many people have suggested it. We should probably give it a go.
And so, you're all weird people for suggesting it.
Really freaking weird. And we're not sure if we're going to ever take your suggestions ever again. But it's so weird. So you can either do a tour that takes you on the bus as a group from your hostel, takes you to, because it's actually in El Alto, the place that's a bit higher up to La Paz. That's where the stadium is, if you call it a stadium, or hall, village hall. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Town hall.
And then they'll take you back again. But, you know, we wanted to save money. So what we did was we got the teleférico, their gondola type system, up to El Alto. We walked there and it was really difficult to find it because we didn't actually know where we were going. But we thought, oh, we'll get to the station, ask where's the Cholita wrestling, and someone will put us in the right direction. We asked so many local people and they had no idea what we were talking about. And I was saying, es un lucha de Cholitas, like it's a fight of Cholita women. And they were like looking at me thinking, what on earth are you talking about? I was getting so embarrassed. And I just thought, it's actually crazy that the tourist world, you know, the gringo world, hears about all these different things and all the local people don't even have a clue what you're talking about. It can be that famous to do in that city. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and yet the locals have no idea it happens. It's very strange. Anyway, we got there in the end. We were like 5-10 minutes late, but we got there at the door. You buy your ticket and I think it was about £6 Great British.
Yeah, something like that.
Wasn't about much. $8 US to go in, and that's your ticket for the show. That includes, you get like some stickers and little souvenirs of little Cholitas. And also you get some snacks, right?
Yeah, like popcorn, yeah. And yeah, the wrestling, it is like WWE, or as I remember, WWF. Like, it's all choreographed, sometimes not very well choreographed. When we first got there, I thought, oh, this would be fun. Like, this could be brilliant. And then I realized, no, it's not great. But actually, do I regret going? No, I don't. Because it's kind of the thing you do there. It was weird. Sometimes it was funny. I know it was all pretend, but the referee was annoying. He kept getting involved, didn't he? And then
way too much.
He was fighting one of the women. So like one woman's up against another woman and the ref, who's a man. And he's like the pantomime villain. And then somehow, the one woman always wins and beats them both. It quickly got a bit boring, didn't it?
It did. Like, it was really cool because, you know, as I said before, Cholitas are traditionally quite big, muscly women. And they're jumping up on the sides of the ring. And because they've got the long plaited hair, they're grabbing each other's hair, flipping them over. It is a proper wrestling match. I mean, if that's your jam, you are going to freaking love it. Like, it's going to be, you're going to, yeah.
And there was one, you were about to say, you're going to jizz yourself.
I was going to say something dirty because we've been hanging out with our friend Becky and that's how she talks.
There was one guy in the crowd who was loving it, wasn't he? And he was getting involved, oh, like, as goodness. If it's real. Like, dude, you know it's not real. But hey, if you enjoy that, fine. And you'll enjoy this because it's different. It's crazy. It's an experience.
Yeah, you know, it's a cheap night out. It's the thing to do there. So I would recommend doing it. I don't regret going. Just once we were there for about 20 minutes, it was kind of repeated material. And I thought, we've already seen this. But then two new people would come out and then they'd kind of do a similar routine. So once you've seen it for a bit, although halfway through, one of them took a drink and I was like, no, she's not going to. Absolutely not. And then, she spat into the other woman's face. I was like, okay, like this is getting a bit weird now. I think I'm going to leave. But it's good to do. I would recommend going. If you're really tight on money, it's a cheap-ish night out when you're traveling. And if you want to make it even cheaper, do what we did. Travel to El Alto on the teleférico, the gondola system, and you're good.
And it's really good for your Instagram boomerangs.
Yes, you can get some good boomerangs there.
Top boomerang material for that, you, the women throwing themselves around. So we're going to take a little break because it's time for our game.
Yes, how high are you? So Becky, you're now here. Hello.
Hello.
So people will remember you from our Iceland episode, right?
Yes, back once again like the Renegade Master, as they say.
We get messages daily for people asking you to come back.
No shock.
So there you go. We've brought her back. We're currently sitting in Mexico. We're on our bed. So having a good
time.
Our
bed. All three of our beds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rumours.
Right, let's get into the game. So how high are you? This game is going to work as so. Becky has found 10 capital cities for us, and it's Nick against me. We're going to have two capital cities, and we'll have to say which one is higher. So Becky's going to be traveling around the world to all these different capital cities. She's currently winking to herself in the mirror.
No, I'm not.
You are weird, aren't you?
Yeah, like, a little bit.
Have you been diagnosed before?
With what? Weird syndromes?
Anything?
No.
Anyway, there's 10 capital cities. So the idea of the game, Becky, is that you're going to be traveling around these cities, and then we're asking how high are you? Because do you go high often?
How high are you right now?
Not high. Yes, I am high. I am pretty high at the moment.
Well, you're not, because you're by the sea, aren't you? So that means you're at sea level.
I don't know, Amy. Okay, I've Googled all these questions
but
and
the,
answers.
The reason why we're playing this game is because, as we all know, La Paz is often mistakenly thought to be the highest capital city in the world. So just before we get into this, Becky, you're going to give us some quick facts about capital cities around the world. And you're going to start by telling us what the highest capital city in the world actually is.
Okay, so the highest capital is Quito. The lowest capital is...
How did she do, Amy?
Okay, isn't you're saying it as an English person, it's Quito.
All right, highest capital is Quito, like okay. Cheetos.
The lowest capital city in the world?
Baku.
Nailed it.
Perfect.
The coldest capital is... Oh, you're joking. is Ulaanbaatar.
Oh, that was pretty close, actually.
Yes.
Ulaanbaatar.
Very good.
The hottest capital is Khartoum.
That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Khartoum. I'm not even completely sure myself.
Yeah, I think that's Sudan, because I just looked it up, I think. Next interesting fact, please.
The most northern capital is Reykjavik.
Boom, and you've been there.
She knows that because, you know, spoiler alert, you're the guest on our Iceland episode. So if you want to hear about Iceland, go listen to that now.
Stinks of egg, doesn't it?
Yes, I am. I just said the Iceland, but yes, it does stink of egg. Not, I don't stink of egg.
Well, you've been ill, haven't you? Bless you.
So the most southern capital is Wellington.
Do you know that you nailed that one? Do you know where that is?
Yep.
What country?
England. There's a place in near Hereford called Wellington, and they've got a football team called Wellington FC.
Becky, what's the capital of England?
Birmingham. Obviously, it's London. I know that was a joke before anyone starts tweeting going, oh my God, this guest. I know it's London.
Should we start the game?
Okay, so you've given us some facts. You're pretty clever, Becky.
Thank you. Yeah, I am.
I'm impressed that you knew all of those. That was great. So what we need from you is to tell us the first two capital cities and Nick and I are going to guess which one is higher or lower.
Okay, so... I may have some problems pronouncing these. Actually, I don't think I do. The first one I do, but that's it. Okay, so between the two is Castries, which is the capital city of Saint Lucia, higher than Athens.
Ooh, good. Okay.
Both by the sea.
I have never heard of the first one. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the game, when I can look at your list, I will have a look. But I don't... Say the name again.
It's... I think it's pronounced Castries. Castries.
St. Lucia. I would say that Athens is higher.
See, I was going to go for Athens being higher as well.
Okay. St. Lucia, Castries, is 204 metres.
Oh, God.
Athens is 153 metres, so you're both wrong.
Both
shock.
Wrong. Awful.
Ouch.
Okay.
Next.
Is Athens, which we know is 153 metres, is Budapest higher or lower in altitude than Athens?
Oh, now we've been to Budapest before. It's by a river. It's got a river Danube running through it.
Trying to show some knowledge, isn't she?
Well, I have got loads of knowledge about the world. I run a travel podcast. But I'm trying to think if it's by the sea. It must be because we went to a music festival there that has the I'm going to say Budapest is lower, so Athens is higher.
I will say that Budapest is higher, so we've got different answers.
Budapest is 102 metres, so actually Athens is 51 metres higher.
Oh,
you must
so
be wrong.
I got it correct. So Madden. I believe, Nick, that is 1 point to me, nil to you.
I'm shocked by that. I don't believe it, but we'll carry on.
Well done, Amy. Okay, straight into it. You're going to know this. I hope you both know this. Obviously, you're against Budapest with Brasilia, if I'm saying that right.
You are?
Yep.
I'm just going to go straight in. Yeah, I would have thought Brasilia is higher than Budapest.
Oh, you've got a funny face on, Becky.
It could be a poker face.
Okay. I think Brasilia is also higher, so the same answer as Nick.
Budapest is 102 metres. Brasilia is 1,079 metres.
Okay. Wow, both I didn't realise it was that high.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
A point each. Amy's winning 2-1.
Okay, I think I'm going to love this because I think you're both going to struggle.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Brasilia, as we just said, 1,079 metres. Is Mexico City higher or lower?
I know my answer. I'm going to say it's higher. I believe Mexico City is about 1,500 metres.
Oh, well, I'm going to give the same answer. I think it's higher, but I think it's around like 2,000 or 3,000 metres.
Actually, I'm going to change my answer. I think it's 1,800 metres.
So you're both correct. Mexico City is higher at 2,240
metres. Oh, wow. So Nick was closer.
But a point each. Amy's winning 3-2. Next capital city, please. By the way, I think you're quite a good like game show host. Have you considered that as a career?
I might take Vernon's position and catchphrase. I don't want to. Oh, it's not even him. Stephen Mulhern, but.
Oh, okay.
I'll scratch that, obviously, just from that.
Well, I think you should know your colleagues before you get into the industry, you know? So get it right next time.
You guys don't understand how much I want to throw this mic at Amy's head right now. Right. Oh, this is an
I'd like to see you try.
Oh, she's always got to be last with a comment, isn't she? Yeah. As a professional host, yeah. I'm going to move straight on. I'll speak to her later. So, Mexico City. The next capital, Hong Kong. Is it higher or lower than Mexico City?
I'll go first. Yeah, I'd say Hong Kong is lower than Mexico City.
Yeah, I was going to say lower as well. I think can we guess meters or?
I'm going to go Hong Kong is 50 meters.
I'm going to say Hong Kong is 75 meters.
Hong Kong is actually 479 metres. So you're both correct,
really?
But completely wrong in metres.
Wow. I didn't know that. Well, we haven't been to Hong Kong, so, you know. But I thought it was, like, right by the sea.
Again, yeah, it's just an island, isn't it? Just, yeah, I thought it was sea level. So, hey. Well, we got it right. We were just way off with our guess. So, still, Amy's winning. 4-3. I need her to give a different answer. And obviously, me to be correct. Bring it on, Beck. This is my capital city next.
It's very close to your actual capital city, Nick. Edinburgh. Is it higher or lower in altitude than Hong Kong?
Oh, now this is a difficult one because Scotland is very mountainous. Edinburgh. Well, this is difficult because I've never been yet. Nick used to go all the time for his job, so that's not fair.
I haven't been to Edinburgh, but I've been to Scotland a lot.
Oh, well, I never listened to when he went on his work trip, so...
And to show you how much I know about Scotland, famously on this podcast, I said the capital of Scotland was Glasgow. So I got that wrong.
Yeah, and you got called out on it as well.
Yeah, mate. All of our many Scottish listeners were not happy. Well, one. One of them was not happy. All right. So what are you going for, Amy?
I'm going to say Edinburgh is lower than Hong Kong.
I'm going to say Edinburgh is higher. This could be it.
So Hong Kong is 479 metres.
Yeah.
Edinburgh. Amy, your spot on is 47 metres.
Yes! Taking the 2-point lead.
Oh my God, this is a disaster. She's winning 5-3.
You're awful, Nick.
Can I win now? I don't think I can.
Can I draw? You can have a good draw.
Exciting. A good draw.
Yeah, a good one. So, well done to that. Right, start again.
That's staying in.
Okay, so Edinburgh was 47 metres. So, competing with Edinburgh is Georgetown.
Oh, and Georgetown is the capital city of... It's like one of the Jamaican islands. It's like... it's not St. Lucia because we spoke about that earlier. It's Georgetown is Saint- what's no no wait what's the country Haiti and what's the other side?
Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic. Is that true?
It is. Georgetown is a city situated on Grand Cayman Island of the Cayman Islands.
Cayman Islands. Oh, right. Okay,
Georgetown. I did read that off Wikipedia just then.
Okay, so it's between Edinburgh and Georgetown.
Correct.
Edinburgh's low, isn't it? But you'd think Caribbean, that would be even lower. I'm going to say it's higher.
I'm going to say it's lower. I think Georgetown is lower.
Edinburgh, as we said, was 47 metres. Amy, you're spotting again. Georgetown is 3 metres.
Yes! Yes, 3-point lead. That's really embarrassing for you, Nick.
It's not just a beating, it's an absolute destruction.
And this makes me really happy because Nick always thinks he's like, and he is, he's very clever geographically, but I mean, I'm beating you now. So how does that make you feel?
I'm not the clever one anymore. That's the only thing I had above you in this relationship, my geography knowledge. Now I've got nothing.
Now you've got nothing. Georgetown was 3 metres. We're going to Kingston.
Oh, now these are very close because Kingston is the capital city of Jamaica.
All right, Michael Palin.
Attenborough to you. Thank you. I'm going to say it was, what was the first one? 3 metres.
Yeah. Georgetown was 3 metres.
Got to be higher.
Kingston.
I'll go higher.
Oh, that might be why it's so juicy.
Sorry.
I'm going to say it's higher as well.
Both higher?
Yeah.
Spot on. Kingston is higher at 53 metres.
Wow, that much higher. Mm.
A lot of them surprise me. Edinburgh, as if it's like only 50 metres above sea level. Interesting. Very good. Thank you, Becky. I enjoyed that.
Oh, was that the last one?
No, we've got one more.
Yeah, I mean, stop wrapping up the game.
Can we finish, please? Go on then. Last one.
Okay. So, Vienna. Is it higher or lower than Kingston?
I'm going to say higher because from Vienna, you can go to the mountains to ski. So I'm going to say that's higher than Kingston.
I agree.
Both spot on. Vienna is 170 metres.
So, Nick, I just want you to read out our final scores there.
Okay, let's have a look. Amy got 8 and I got 5. That's more respectable than I thought, but well and truly beaten. Congratulations, Amy. Your capital city knowledge is far superior to mine.
So does that mean I'm the highest person in the room?
Yeah.
Amy, you are.
Definitely.
You are high.
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. Da 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 da
da da da. I was going to clean my room.
You're done now.
Cut that out.
Right, so after all the fun and excitement of our game, How High Are You?, we are going to talk about prison life. What a great way to mix things up. The reason we're talking about this is because La Paz has one of the strangest prisons in the entire world. And you might know about this if you've read a book called Marching Powder, which was written by an Australian author called Rusty Young. It's actually based on a true story of a British Tanzanian man called Thomas McFadden, who was apprehended in 1996 at La Paz Airport in Bolivia with 5 kilos of cocaine in his suitcase. So then he was taken to the San Pedro prison. But the book goes into his life in the prison and it actually became a bestseller and cult classic. So it's quite an important book. You probably have heard of it. If not, I'd recommend reading it. But this prison is so bizarre. You know, you've got prisoners that live on the inside. They pay rent to stay on the inside. The prison isn't run by prison guards. It's run by the prisoners themselves. Children are inside the prison. There's a school inside there. The prison is sponsored by Coca-Cola. If you walk on the inside, which I wouldn't recommend at this point, you'll see everything covered in Coca-Cola. You know, the vending machines, the tables, the chairs, everything is sponsored by Coca-Cola. They have jacuzzis on the inside. It's just such a bizarre place, isn't it?
Imagine a city within a prison with businesses, yeah, restaurants, shoe repair shops, everything. And basically, the more money you have when you're arrested, because yeah, like you said, they have to pay rent. So you're arrested, you're thrown in this prison, then they say, right, this cell will cost you this much a month, this cell will cost you this, blah, blah, blah. So if you're a wealthy person, you can, and people did or do, have a fun lifestyle in there. Like you can live the life in there. You can live the life of luxury. And what makes this place even more bizarre is that tourists used to go in, like pay to go in for like a week, 2 weeks. They'd have the most crazy, wild parties in there. And then after a week or two, they leave and they carry on their travels around South America. Now, I'd be worried about, well, one, going in anyway, but I'm sure getting in would be a lot easier than getting out. And we've been told that when tourists have gone in, they say, okay, I'm done now. I want to leave. And the guard's like, no, what are you talking about? You're a prisoner here now. And then eventually when you give them a lot of money, they'll let you out. Just what a crazy, bizarre place.
And that is the exact reason why you don't want to go in today. Yes, it used to be a popular spot to go for a party. It is one of the most craziest things to do. It's crazy tourism. But yeah. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I would love to have gone in there and seen as a journalist what's going on. But we wouldn't do that because nowadays it's a completely different place. Like Nick said, you can go in. The officers will let you go in because there's guards on the outside. But when you want to come out, they will act all confused and they won't understand what you're saying. And they'll say, no, you're a prisoner. You're not leaving this prison. So do not go in under any circumstances. That's our safety advice for this. But what you can do if you want to get involved and understand more about the prison is go to the plaza where San Pedro Prison is, because it's just in the middle of the city. That's what makes it even stranger. It's not a prison that's secluded away from the general public and with barbed wires and all of this. It's just a building. But you're in this plaza, and what you can do is every day you can go there to meet an ex-inmate.
If you got the money, honey, we got your disease. In a jungle! Welcome to the jungle!
That is the famous Crazy Dave. And like Amy said, he's there every day telling stories for tips. Now, the reason why he is there now in Bolivia is because he's from New York. He's an American guy. He was paid to go to Bolivia and smuggle back a lot of cocaine. And he was arrested at the airport, in prison. And then since he got out, he's just stayed there earning tips, okay? Now, we'll share with you a little of what he told us. Just some information for you guys. He talks quite a bit about Snow White. Now, we know what he means. He's talking about cocaine.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll every fucking day. Until the 8th month, I drained my life savings. All my money was gone. I found myself walking around schizophrenic, suicidal. What the hell is life worth living for in a cult? Tell me, sir. Knock, knock. Open up this freaking door, amigos. It's Dave. I'm back. I gotta see Snow White, boys. Amigos, come on now. Open the fucking door. I'm jonesing. I got the monkey in my back. You don't open up. I'm gonna kick this fucking door. Pretty please, amigos. Open this fucking door. Amigos, knock, knock. Lay down the fucking door. Try to capture the logic to why they call me Crazy Dave. Little boy, you're a kid. I'm gonna name you Chris. What's up, Chris? I'm your daddy, Chris. How you doing, buddy? You gotta be really crazy, buddy, to come down here in 2002, you know, try to blend in like a Bolivian, blacken the Bolivians, Spanglish, and have the gun try to take Snow White back home. That's what locked me up because of her 2.5 kilograms of cocaine and beer bottles. I had to make magic happen. 30 grand I was offered.
Now, hopefully you native English speakers out there got what he was saying, because he's a really fascinating guy. And that was just a little montage. If you go to see him, you'll be there for at least an hour. He goes through his story. He explains why he got there, what life was like on the inside. He actually has a really impressive story on the inside where he was teaching the Spanish children English and, you know, was paid by the other prisoners. It is a really fascinating story, and I would recommend going to meet him. He might seem a little bit, just a word of warning, he might seem a little bit
crazy.
Crazy. He gives himself that name, by the way. We're not calling him Crazy Dave. That is how he calls himself, or the nickname that he got from the prison. But if you go there at 1 o'clock in this plaza, you'll notice him there because he'll be telling his stories. People normally sit on the bench in front of him. And he's a very animated character. He's so interesting, but he may kind of, you know, skip around and jump and cause a scene. But he's very fascinating, and I would recommend going to listen to him. He's someone worth listening to.
And actually, like, a friendly, like, warm guy. When you look from a distance, you might think, I don't know if I want to go close. He looks a bit scary. But as soon as you walk over, he's like, hey, friends, come on over. Like, join the story. Like, fist pumps you. And he's actually a really warm, nice guy. I mean, yeah, he's clearly got some issues and, like, he's obviously had a traumatic life which got him on a bad path. And I would have thought he's homeless now. It looks like he's homeless. But actually, a warm guy. And like Amy said, what a fascinating life he's lived. Well worth your visit when you're in La Paz. Just one of the very interesting many things to do in this city, in La Paz.
Yeah, we absolutely love La Paz. Like Nick said, some people hate it, some people love it. It's a very Marmite city. But from us, we would say we love it. We think it's great. There's lots to do that's different to other cities in South America.
Oh, yeah, unique.
So it was a really nice, unique change when you're traveling all the countries at once. And I think Bolivia is almost a second thought as well. I just want to say that so many people want to travel Chile and they definitely want to travel Peru. And they're like, oh, I'll just add on Bolivia. Where out of them all, I think San Pedro in Chile was my favorite out of that region. But Bolivia is a very close second. And I think it shouldn't be thought of as an afterthought because it's so unique. Yes, it's similar to its neighboring countries, but it's so unique and worth its, you know, full visit.
I think so. To get the, you know, the Andean, I struggle with that word, you know, the Andes, the mountains, to get that part of South America, I think it's the best place. It was my favorite place for that type of South America. We're not even finished yet. We are going to briefly move on to our last stop, which was Copacabana, which is a town on Lake Titicaca in Bolivia, right near the border of Peru. When we were there, it was like a bank holiday, some sort of holiday. It was heaving. There were so many people there. We actually saw lots of people who were parked up near the lake. They were camping. And I remember seeing people with bottles of alcohol. They pour a bit of alcohol on their car first before they drank it. Pachamama, good luck, superstition, that whole side of it was coming in again. I would honestly say that Copacabana itself is nothing special, but it is on Lake Titicaca and it's worth seeing. It's huge, it's massive. The fact it's a lake at such a high altitude, it's interesting. There's a strong Incan relation there. It is an interesting place. Lake Titicaca is beautiful, but Copacabana, I don't know if you agree, I thought it was okay.
It was okay. I didn't really particularly like the city in terms of, like, you know, restaurants and that. I found it quite difficult to move around in. We were only there for like 2 days, but I did love the lake. I think it was beautiful. You can do some beautiful walks there. And when you go to Lake Titicaca, you have lots of options, but two main ones really. You can either go to Copacabana in Bolivia or you can go to Puno, which is on the Peruvian side. So, and some people do both. We only did Copacabana in Bolivia, but I would recommend it if you're passing from one country to the other. I think it's a good stop for a day or two, but I wouldn't recommend any more than that.
Yeah, and you can do a tour from Copacabana to Isla de Sol, Sun Island.
Isla de Sol,
which, yeah, apparently the Incan people believe that's where the sun was born.
And I think there's Isla de Luna as well, so where the moon, yes, was born. I think it was Sun and Moon.
Yeah, Sun and Moon Island, yeah. Yeah, if you're passing through, definitely go. Like, it wasn't a bad place at all, no way. Some of the scenery was really beautiful, but at that point I remember thinking to myself, this is nothing I haven't really seen before. I'm ready to move on to Peru. But, you know, that was our last stop in Bolivia. But such a fond time there. It was one of my favourite parts of the trip. I really liked Bolivia. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I loved Bolivia, but I think you definitely liked it a lot more than me.
Yeah, I did.
There's lots more that you can explore as well. You know, you could go to Sucre, which is the new capital city there. And there's lots of places that we didn't explore that you can do. And I think in a few years' time, people are going to find more the north east side of the country, because that's going towards the Amazon rainforest, isn't it?
Amazon, yeah. And actually, some people we bumped into on the trip, they did an ayahuasca retreat in the rainforest, which is, it's, people don't know, it's not really a drug. It's a root from a tree and it has an effect on you. It can make you hallucinate and make you sick, but the next day you're supposed to feel like a new person, reborn. But that was in Bolivia, and that was more the Amazon side of things, and we didn't go anywhere near that part of Bolivia. But you're right, Amy, for a fairly small country, there's a lot to do there.
Yeah, and I think in the next few years, more and more places are going to become places that backpackers want to explore. So yeah, keep your eye out for Bolivia. It is a very impressive country. We've now come to the end of our little Bolivia adventure. So it means we need to mark the country out of 10.
Okay, so we go culture first. So very strong culture. Is it my favorite culture ever? No, but it's one of my favorites. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 for culture. Like with the chilitas, there's lots of unique things about Bolivia. So 8 out of 10.
I was thinking, if you want culture, if that's the sort of travel that you want, I think Bolivia is a great place to go because you have food, you have color, you have, yeah, the cholita women. Like there's so much
Pachamama,
culture.
Pachamama, superstitions.
Traditions. You have a lot. So in that sense, I think it's a 10 out of 10.
Woo!
But I agree with you. It's not my favorite culture though. So for me, it would be like an 8 out of 10. But if you travel for culture in cities and understanding places that are completely different to yours, I would say it's a 10 out of 10. You need to go.
Interesting.
Next category is price. What is it out of 10 for you?
We've said it before and I'll say it again. Bolivia is cheap. Everything about it. Transport, food, activities.
Accommodation.
10 out of 10.
I'm going to say the same. 10 out of 10. It's a brilliant place. If you don't have much money, bang on a flight and you don't need much money when you're there. I think if you spent one entire month in Bolivia, per person, backpacker, you know, staying in hostels and doing activities, I would say you need £400 to £500.
You
great
could do
British
it.
Pounds. So that's yeah. Like $650 US dollars in a month, you know, and that's living quite a lavish life, eating 3 times a day, staying in nice hostels and doing lots of activities.
You could do it for sure. I don't disagree with that.
And let's move on to the last category, which is nature. What would you mark it out of 10?
The mountains around La Paz, the salt flat. It's got to be 10 out of 10.
I don't know.
It's got the largest salt flat in the world.
Yeah. And all the mountains, yeah. But it's not a 10 out of 10 for me because a 10 out of 10 is like Mexico or Brazil where you've got all waterfalls and you have loads of different types of terrain. For me, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. It's still very strong and it's an impressive place to go. Yeah, 9 out of 10.
Amazing.
So there's some really high marks there. You know, there's
really
10s
high.
Out of 10s, 9s out of 10s. Very high. So that was Bolivia, guys. What's next, Nick?
So our mini episode coming up on the 15th of the month is a special all about Brazil Carnival. Now, I'm going to share something with you guys. When I put this together, I played it back for Amy to listen to and inspect. She listened to it, and after an hour, she put the headphones down and she said, "That was so much fun. Like, I felt like I was back in Brazil." So the whole point of it is to show you the fun of Carnival, but also give you a bit of guide. What is Carnival and what's the best way to celebrate it? And then our next main episode will be about Portugal. We're heading back to Europe.
Guys, don't forget you can always support us on Patreon. Subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. If you want to know more about that San Pedro prison, we have created a film about that. It's a really short one. It's like 4 to 5 minutes long. You'll be able to see the prison. You'll be able to see Crazy Dave. He's a very interesting guy, like we said. So make sure you go to YouTube, subscribe to the channel, click the little bell so you get all of our notifications when we have new videos coming out as well. And also, if you do have some spare time, giving us an iTunes review or on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts at, drop us a review. It really, really helps.
And if you want to look cool and support the show, we also sell merchandise, including t-shirts. All the information, everything we just said, is on our website.
Thanks very much for listening, guys. And like we said, we'll be back for Brazil Carnival and Portugal. See you then.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with the show. You can email us at whatthefoepodcast@gmail.com. We are also on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are also on Patreon. For more information on all those things, you can go to our website at www.whatthefoetravelpodcast.com.